Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, August 21st, 2018. A civil society activist at the talks says the parties still don't trust each other.
And we feel that if these parties do not build that trust, confidence, and acceptance of one another, they will only form a transitional government that will be a time bomb.
And a rebel faction of Paul Malong's group rejoins the government.
He could have done this much earlier than now. But now that he has done it, we are so happy that he has done it.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Civil society leaders at the IGAD-brokered South Sudan peace talks in Khartoum have appealed to the country's warring parties to start building trust and confidence among each other as they prepare to sign the revitalized 2015 peace agreement, which possibly could be signed as early as this weekend. Rajab Mohandas, one of the civil society leaders attending the talks, says the body language of the delegates is not encouraging. He says if the parties continue to be suspicious of one another's motives, the culture of violence will continue in South Sudan.
There has been sufficient consensus, compromises, and commitments reached by the parties to this process. Unfortunately, one critical element of peace that we expected has not manifested itself, and that is trust and confidence among the parties. And we feel that if these parties do not build that trust, confidence, and acceptance of one another, they will only form a transitional government that will be a time bomb.
How do you build trust and confidence in an environment where the people who are discussing or negotiating fought a bitter war? A case in point, Dr. Riek Machar was chased from Juba under gunfire. How do you expect such a person to trust the government of South Sudan?
We are aware of all this bitterness that emerged as a result of this conflict, the differences that widened relations among the people of South Sudan. And of course, it is not good. It is challenging for the country, and it's the reason why the country is in this situation. However, primary objective of this forum is to bridge and narrow the gaps among these parties and create an environment for them to be able to coexist peacefully and embark on implementation of the commitments they have already made in the peace process and help to reconcile and unite our people.
What makes you believe that the parties will work together and trust each other when they are in Juba?
If they do not agree in the process of the high-level revitalization forum, to really work together, to talk to one another and prepare to work together and accept one another, it presents a very serious challenge to the next transition, and it's a potential time bomb for the country. And so we will continue to call on them, the religious leaders and all South Sudanese and the leaders in the region, to ensure that there is conversation that among these parties, and that they are able to accept one another and focus on delivering on the commitments, these commendable commitments they have already made.
What is special about this revitalized 2015 peace agreement? Analysts in the region who are familiar with this agreement are already saying that this is, quote, an old wine in a new bottle.
Well, of course, it is the same agreement that has been revitalized. Most of the contents have remained the same, but there are a few things that are quite special. Number one is that transitional security arrangements that provides for 8 months of transition, I mean pre-transition period, for the parties to clean up the militias and the security forces that are all over the place with the guns that present a challenge in security to the country, the people, and also the implementation of the agreement. So it's going to help if they are able to implement this provision to improve on the security situation and create conducive environment for successful implementation of the agreement. Number two, they have agreed on specifically using the oil proceeds to improve on the livelihoods of the people of South Sudan and to fight poverty. These are important commitments that go directly to the people. They have also agreed to prioritize things like service delivery and infrastructure development.
That's Rajab Mohandas, a civil society activist attending the South Sudan peace negotiations in Sudan, and he was speaking from Khartoum with my colleague John Tanza earlier today. A spokesman for the SPLA-IO says the group is happy to hear that the facilitator of regional peace efforts in South Sudan will step aside. The Kenya Daily News reported yesterday that former Botswana President Festus Muhai, who chairs the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or JMEC, in South Sudan, has decided to step aside. The newspaper quotes Muhai as saying he's been pleased with the progress of the peace process so far, but wanted to turn the next phase over to what he calls fresh hands. Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel, deputy military spokesman for the SPLA-IO, tells VOA's James Buddy that the rebels were never satisfied with Muhai's ability to run JMEC.
We are very happy that he has finally realized he has done a lot of nothing as far as monitoring the peace that took us to Juba in 2016. He could have done this much earlier than now. But now that he has done it, we are so happy that he has done it. And we really appreciate it. Even if he has not done so much, really, but we appreciate his time.
So why do you say that he could have stepped down earlier? Are you saying that the SPLA-IO has not been satisfied with the way former President Muhai conduct the peace process?
That is true. Since 2015, when it was signed, we sent our advance team to Juba in December, followed by the deployment of our military forces in March 2016. But there has been a lot of call from us to make sure Juba get demilitarized. PESCO did not make sure Juba was demilitarized. And that led to the uprising, or maybe the coup that the president of the state again assists in the people of South Sudan when he tried to assassinate Dr. Riek Machar in Juba. Everything was staged, and it was open. It could even be seen by a person there that Juba was planning to assassinate Dr. Riek and wipe out the SPLA-IO in Juba. But instead of warning, or maybe telling Juba to stop all this evil plan against Dr. Riek Machar and the SPLA-IO, he let them continue with it, and until it explodes, in July 2016, he should have done much better than that. He knew it was going to that, but he kept quiet. Even after when we were forced out of Juba by Salva Kiir, we have been complaining to him. I believe Dr. Riek Machar called him several times to make sure he restrained. He had got the authority to restrain Salva Kiir, but he kept quiet. He let it go. Even he blessed Tabandenga when they decided to put Tabandenga as the first vice president to replace Dr. Riek Machar. So we were not satisfied completely. Even up to now, we are not satisfied. When the war continued after that, in 2017, up to early this year, President Muhai was still saying Juba was peaceful. How do you call Juba peaceful when there was war going on? So he succumbed to the pressure from the regime in Juba, instead of being neutral, instead of being the leader.
Well, the former president said that he's pleased with the way the peace process has gone. In response to maybe your argument, but he said he realized that there were some misgivings in the way the peace process started, but he was able to revitalize the failed agreement, which led to the recent agreement. So he feels that it's time for him to step down and let somebody else now take it from there, because now the peace process is on the right course.
I don't think the revitalized peace agreement that is coming closer, it was because of him. No, I really don't believe that. But it was because of the zeal and the strength of the SPLA-IO to resist the government in Juba. That was why we were able to influence the decision of the international community, the IGAD, to make sure they release the correct material. They allowed the peace process to go throughout. And right now, we are seeing peace coming closer. But it wasn't the initiative of President Muhai. No, I don't believe that. Because without us resisting, but by now, maybe it was they are going to continue enjoying Juba. But because of our pressure, we are seeing peace right now. But as I said earlier, we are going towards peace, and we are so appreciative that he has made a decision to step down. Because when we are going to Juba, we don't want someone who is weak like him. We want someone who is strong, who is able to tell Salva Kiir, this is wrong. You don't need to do this. Who is able to tell Dr. Riek, but this is wrong. Don't do this. But if there is someone who is able to listen to one side and fail to listen to the other, like President Mugabe did in 2016, from 2016 to today, then we don't want that kind of person.
So where are we on the new peace deal? I mean, is everything working out fine?
Security-wise, I can see there has been quite an improvement because the guns have gone silent really for quite some time now.
That is Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel, deputy military spokesman for the SPLA in opposition, speaking with VOA's James Buddy. Meanwhile, a faction of the South Sudan United Front Army, led by former Chief of Staff General Paul Malong, has defected back to the government. Brigadier General Chan Garang, the leader of the breakaway group, says he is taking more than 300 officers and soldiers with him. A Juba-based analyst says the group made the move because rebellion is no longer attractive. Mnyang David Mayar has the story for VOA from Juba.
SPLA spokesman Brigadier General Lul Rai Kong announced the rebel faction led by Brigadier General Chan Garang Lual is rejoining the government at a news conference in Juba yesterday.
When he defected, of course, he started launching operations on the outskirts of Juba. Many of you who had been here would agree with me that after his defection, he posed a real threat to the residents of Juba. He made a number of daring raids on our defensive positions west of Juba, a number of road ambushes on Juba Luri Road, and other operations that he carried out. So we are talking of a very able field commander who defected, gave us hard time, and with his return, I strongly believe insecurity around Juba is going to be a thing of the past.
According to Kong, Chan Garang defected in 2017 and joined SPLA IO led by Riek Machar. He later defected and joined the South Sudan United Front, a struck army led by former army chief General Paul Malong. Speaking in Arabic at the news conference, Brigadier General Chan Garang said he defected from the government because he was opposed to the killings of youth from his home area of Awil, which he says were carried out by government security operatives when General Paul Malong was placed under house arrest by President Salva Kiir.
The President of the Republic announced an amnesty offer. We had it and we accepted, and that is why we have decided to return. This is our home. We sent our brother Ajang ahead to see if he would be arrested, but he was not arrested, and we followed him. So I have come, and I believe many will follow me.
Ajang Lino, who calls himself commander-in-chief of the returning forces, says his group negotiated with the government and agreed on the terms before his group returned to Juba.
Our position wasn't wrong. It wasn't positions. It was the grievances that required people sitting down. President sent the National Security Director a call code. He sat with us. We negotiate. We only call Uganda to witness. And they witness. We sign a peace, negotiated in one day, signed in one day. Because General Malong was not in consensus with us, we left him away. But he will still come back at his own time.
Ajang says more than 300 rebel soldiers will be reintegrated into their former units in the Sudan's People's Liberation Army. Ajang claims that the decision by his group to return to the government marks an end of military activities by the South Sudan United Front, its struck army. But in a statement issued today, Sunday Dijon, a spokesperson of the South Sudan United Front, its struck army, under General Malong, disputes Ajang's claims. He says Grang's group had no connection to Malong's South Sudan United Front, its struck army. James Okuk, a political analyst and a political science professor at the University of Juba, says Grang's group was part of the South Sudan United Front, and Malong's rebel group has been weakened by the defection of Grang's faction.
The rebellion is no longer attractive, and Sudan has taken the lead with Uganda and Kenya and Ethiopia all together, and they are saying it is time for peace in South Sudan. And whoever wants to continue with rebellion will face the consequences. So this is what's happening. And those of Shan might have been advised earlier that rebellion is no longer saleable.
Okuk says, given the progress of the peace talks in Khartoum, the most viable thing to do now is for all the rebel groups, including General Paul Malong's, to, as he put it, join the train of peace. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar in Juba.
In the past few hours, South Sudanese authorities have released academic and political commentator Jock Madut Jock after detaining him for more than 24 hours at Juba Central Prison. Jock was arrested yesterday at Juba International Airport by agents from the Criminal Investigation Department of the South Sudan National Police Service. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the details for VOA from Juba.
Police spokesman Brigadier General Daniel Justin says Jock was arrested following an order from a court of law. He says several months ago, Jock bailed out a relative suspected of raping and impregnating a 12-year-old girl, but has repeatedly failed to produce the suspect in court.
It is actually related to a case of rape happens in January. One of his relatives, or the son of his brother, was the accused in that case. Then the case was investigated and taken to court. All this time, the hearings were going on, but three times they were summoned for the court. None of them attended, nor the accused or him who bailed the accused. So yesterday there were a hearing, and then I think later on the court discovered that he is in the airport traveling. So the court issued an order of arrest. So he was arrested, brought to the court, and then he is now kept for the next sitting.
Jock, who is founder of the Juba-based Suit Institute, has been a critic of the Kiir administration. Some commentators in social media appeared to imply that Jock might have been arrested in connection with his criticism of the government. Justin insists this was not the case.
It has nothing to do with politics. It has nothing to do with his job. But even it has nothing to do with himself, because he has bailed somebody. But he has failed to bring the person to the court. Three times, this is the first time of yesterday. So it is just a legal court procedures. Usually when you bail somebody, the court, even the undertaking you have taken, is that to bring the person whenever he is needed by the police or the court.
Justin calls on the public not to distort circumstances surrounding Jock's arrest.
People should not involve themselves through social media in this case, because it is a clear case. It is before the court. Mr. Jock is having a lawyer, and then the lawyer from the complainer is there. So it has nothing to do with politics.
Jock was released after the Justice Ministry bailed him out. He's speaking to South Sudan in Focus shortly after his release. Jock said his arrest did not follow usual procedures.
My arrest was entirely unprocedural, given that even though I had bailed somebody out, I was never at all about a court date, court time. There was no summons. So I had no idea. The first thing they issued, instead of a summons to appear in court, issued a warrant of arrest. So that in itself was not the way you do things. And so then they also arrested me on the eve of Eid, knowing that the next day there would be no open court. So then the Minister of Justice intervened today and release me on my personal cognizance.
According to Jock, the suspect fled to Sudan, but is now back in Wau and contacted him to say he will appear in court on Thursday. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Health workers at a refugee camp in Uganda say it's not easy, but they'll continue helping their fellow South Sudanese. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you get international news?
I watch TV most of the time, and I have an app in my phone that has notifications about that.
I get international news from internet, and sometimes we have TVs, that's televisions, which can provide international news.
International news I get through the television, and sometimes when I get access to internet, I browse through the different websites.
I'm always with a TV in my room, and every time I get to listen to news, being a law student, I need to follow a lot of news, and I'm normally close to local radio stations, and at times I read the New Vision when I get the time.
I get international news from my mobile. I have applications for news that I get regularly.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, and it's now time for our Tuesday health segment. And today we're talking about the measles vaccine. The World Health Organization warns complacency and misinformation linking the measles vaccine to dangerous side effects have seen the highest number of measles cases and deaths in the European region in a decade. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports more than 41,000 children and adults in the European region have been infected with measles in the first 6 months of this year, including 37 deaths. This is a dramatic increase from 2016, when fewer than 5,300 cases of this killer disease were reported, the lowest number in a decade. Mark Muscat is Technical Officer for Vaccine Preventable Diseases in WHO's Regional Office for Europe. He tells VOA one of the main factors accounting for this sharp rise in infections is complacency. He says the measles vaccine has been so successful in preventing the spread of this killer disease, many parents do not feel the need to vaccinate their children. He says the fear of side effects also discourages many people from vaccinating their children. For example, he notes great damage has been caused by a now-debunked 1998 study linking the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine to autism.
Unfortunately, that monster still has legs and still goes around. It has been ingrained in the mentality of some people, linking the measles vaccine with autism and so on, and that is actually in a lot of people's minds. This is all misinformation. That study has been retracted. It is not a valid study, and people should not make up their minds based on that study.
Seven European countries, France, Georgia, Greece, Italy, Russia, Serbia, and Ukraine, report more than 1,000 infections in children and adults this year. Ukraine, with over 23,000 measles cases, is the hardest hit. Serbia reports the highest number of deaths, 14 out of Europe's 37 fatalities. Measles is extremely contagious and a major killer of children. To prevent outbreaks, WHO says at least 95% immunization coverage with two doses of measles-containing vaccine is needed every year in every community. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South Sudanese health workers at a refugee settlement in Uganda's Moyo district say they're determined to continue to help fellow refugees despite the many challenges they face in the process. Most workers at the settlement completed their studies at Yei River State's KJKG Health Training Institute in 2016, even as fighting continued to spread across the country. The institute eventually relocated to Arua. Simon Peter Apiku reports for VOA from Moyo.
Isaac Dake, who enrolled at the Kajukeji Health Training Institute in 2014, says his passion to contribute to South Sudan's healthcare system persuaded him to stay in Kajukeji and finish his studies, even as thousands of residents fled across the border. Dake now operates a small drug shop in the Palorinya refugee settlement. He says the shop helps dozens of refugees each day get access to drugs that are sometimes in short supply at clinics and health centers managed by humanitarian organizations.
It will help you, the drug shop owner, in getting a little money for your family.
But for Soro Peter Alex, a clinical officer serving refugees at Palorinya, his work was never about money.
We join so that we can help our community. It's a call from God. I decided our own people, like South Sudanese, who are suffering. We have lack of medical profession. People are even dying because of lack of medical people.
After obtaining a license to operate in Uganda, Alex opened a clinic of his own in Palorinya, which he says eases congestion at other health centers in the settlement.
I have made a small ward where I admit 5 beds, and at least a day, my beds are all full. So though things in the come, you know, we work on credit. You treat somebody today, we'll pay after 2-3 months. So we have understand ourselves.
Alex admits as a clinical officer with limited resources and facilities, there are cases he must often refer to larger, more equipped health facilities within the settlement or in the towns of Moyo or Adjumani.
The most common disease we have here is this common one, tropical sickness. We have malaria, diarrhea, intestinal worms, dysentery general, typhoid. Of course, it's a common disease because of this water of ours. We have dirty water.
Lokiri Peter Yakata, a former principal of the Kajokeji Health Training Institute, now based in Palorinya, says the establishment of health facilities by South Sudanese health professionals in the settlements or their work with medical organizations is crucial to the delivery of health care services for refugees.
They have been doing a lot in terms of health education, participating in outpatient consultation and treatment, and many other community-related health programs that they have been doing. It has been impacting very positively to the people of South Sudan.
Yakata works for Relief International, the main organization delivering healthcare services in Palorinya. In addition to his regular duties, Yakata supports the organization's mobile clinics that bring health services closer to the people. Twice a week, he and his colleagues camp in the middle of Palorinya's Budri zone to offer services to South Sudanese refugees. Refugee Bugo Oliver Mugolia says he is grateful that Yakata and other health workers come to his neighborhood.
It's very good because when it is not brought close to the community, some of the community members will not be bothering to go to the nearby clinics.
Alex and Ndeke say, aside from the day-to-day challenges of bringing drugs from Kampala to the settlement, like harassment from Ugandan tax officials or regulatory bodies, they must offer their services at extremely affordable prices, or refugees would not be able to access certain medical treatment. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Moyo.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Wife is a Blessing by Isaka Number One.
MC Malumano. Benu sahili lakini mahaja sahili ya kwanie Bi ainu haja sakit lakini mahaja sakit ya kwani Fi haja benu sahili lakini mahaja sahili ya kwani Bi ainu haja sahili lakini mahaja sahili ya kwanie Marane hadi ya min ala Wife is a blessing from God Almighty. Kanita mendumara binadita lo bilong. Kanita jibumara bijibuleta ilong. That's why I say
blessing,
blessing. Mara de hadia min rabuna.
Blessing.
A wife is a blessing from God Almighty.
Blessing.
Blessing. Mara de hadia min Allah.
Blessing.
Blessing. A wife is a blessing from God Almighty. Kelina mafekir gali, mara best shokol toka sola fashan. Kelina mafekir gali, mara best shokol tora kabu fibet.
We've been listening to Isaka Number One with his song Wife is a Blessing. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles today. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.
Fimara lagara wa indu shihada bigeni fimaktab kaman Fimara laru business kaman bi indu gurus Fimara laru gobudu musulia zera jilbi gobudu musulia.